Hey guys, Greg and Coda here from Unfortunate History. I'm just dropping in to let you know about the Facebook group we've got going. It's got a ton of cool stuff going on there. Do you want to let them know what it is, Cody?
Yeah, we're doing a bunch of polls on each episode so you can try to guess the topics. We're also doing a lot of things in the future, like merch giveaways. So there's a lot of exciting things happening on the Facebook group. So please go join today.
Just search Unfortunate History Podcast.
See you there.
This is Unfortunate History.
What's up, everybody? This is Cody Pennington.
And this is Greg Skinner.
And welcome to Unfortunate History, the podcast that covers the wacky, interesting, and unfortunate moments in history. And today, we are going to be covering the Tulsa Race Massacre.
I think everyone knows by now that I'm going to say I know nothing about it, and that would be absolutely correct. I know nothing about this, but I am interested.
Yeah, it's a very interesting topic. This is the topic that I said would actually be our 35th episode, but I've been researching it so much, I just couldn't wait. So we're going to do it now. On the night of May 31st, 1921, the town of Tulsa, Oklahoma, was the site of a gruesome and intense racial extermination. The target of this attack was Greenwood, an affluent black neighborhood that was seen as the pinnacle of black society at the time. Now, throughout the next few days, the black community in Greenwood was rounded up and placed in cells. That is, if they weren't murdered first.
It's going to be one of those episodes. Okay.
Well, it's going to be pretty intense. This is an intense topic, so I want to make a big disclaimer. I think we should still try to keep it as fun as possible. It's going to be a heavy topic, but our whole shtick is to try to make things interesting and maybe break it up with a bit of humor, but we're obviously not going to be laughing at any victims during this podcast.
No. I'll just put my big boy hat on and promise to behave myself for this episode.
Good job, Greg. Now, before we dive into this topic, I want to give a huge shout out to our source. Now, this source is awesome. It's one of the best sources that I've used on an episode, I think, since we started this show. The book is called The Burning by Tim Madigan. And if you want an incredibly detailed look into this topic, the Tulsa Race Massacre, The Burning is the only book you will need. It is an absolutely astonishing book. There is details about every single character in this book. You learn about everyone's backstory. You learn about what's happened throughout the entire night to almost every single family it happened to. It's absolutely insane. It's a very good book. So I would definitely suggest you pick up this book. I think it's kind of underhanded that I'm saying all of this, and we're probably going to have an affiliate link where you can purchase this, which you don't have to use the affiliate link if you want. Just Google The Burning by Tim Madigan. But if you want to support the show, you can purchase this book through the link in the episode description or on our website. But either way, it's a great book.
So you mean to tell me we don't exclusively use Wikipedia articles? Is that what you're saying?
We don't exclusively use Wikipedia articles. Matthew!
And we're not fucking Bill and Ted or whatever he said we were.
We're probably Bill and Ted, but we definitely use more than Wikipedia.
Yeah.
For this episode, I also used a couple of YouTube documentaries, and I also used a New York Times article. Very interesting stuff.
Oh.
Now, before we start into this, we got to discuss why this happened, and also how it happened, obviously. But to answer those two questions, a bit of context is needed for the time period, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, racial tensions in the U.S. in the 1920s were very high.
Yeah.
To say the least. Now, segregation was in full swing. Greg, do you know what segregation is? You probably do. I fully
know what segregation is.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't mean to insult your intelligence.
No, it's cool.
We're trying to reach every single class of listener here.
I typically am like scraping the barrel bottom when it comes to intelligence on these things. But yes, I know what segregation is.
Okay, fantastic. Well, that was in full swing at this point.
Cody just messaged me what segregation is quick. Sorry.
Now, segregation helped see to it that black and white communities were completely separate, because that was the point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, laws commonly referred to as the Jim Crow laws had already affected much of the black community in the South, as well as the North. We discussed the Jim Crow laws in our Emmett Till episode. You'll remember some of these.
Yeah.
Now, these laws were a culmination of efforts to control the black population. Quite a lot of the time, though, these laws wouldn't actually single out African Americans specifically, although there were laws that did that. They would instead adversely affect them in a roundabout way. For instance, one of the laws that we discussed on the Emmett Till episode was relating to voting laws. So voting laws in some southern states would require voters to prove their literacy. And if they were unable to do so, they would not be allowed to vote.
I remember that from the Emmett Till episode, because you said they just made them impossibly hard, didn't they?
They did, yeah. They also made it impossibly hard for anybody to solve. But that was for the black community that was actually literate. There was a large portion of the African-American community in the South that wasn't literate because they came from very difficult educational backgrounds, because their generation and their immediately previous generation, some of them were slaves.
Wouldn't the majority of them have been slaves during that time, the generation prior to this?
Quite a few of them, yeah. They would have absolutely been slaves. They wouldn't have had the access to the education. So if they were literate, they were given very difficult tests. If they weren't literate, then they just weren't allowed to vote, which was obviously clawing their rights back from the black community.
We've been through this before with Emmett Till. It's just a similar reaction I'm having. It's just making it as hard as it possibly can be to live.
That's all it is, really, is making it difficult to live.
Mm-hmm.
There are other countless examples of these types of roundabout discriminatory laws, like a lot of places, especially when it comes to segregation, you know, you have to stay separate. Mm-hmm. All of that adversely affect the black community in different ways. Now, another prime example of this that's very pertinent to the story, actually, was a practice known as redlining.
Yep.
Now, in essence, redlining was a way in which neighborhoods were graded according to their risk factor in relation to granting mortgages. So if you wanted to get a mortgage, say, in a black neighborhood, the mortgage company would not necessarily allow that.
It's just making it hard for any sort of racial mixing.
Yeah, in essence, it makes it very difficult for any racial mixing to happen. Even if segregation laws were done away with, you'd still have these issues with redlining, where it would be an attempt to keep racial minorities and even whites in their own particular areas.
So even it was still, I'm not saying it's working against, but even it was still, it affected all races in some regard.
Well, yeah, it kept white people in certain neighborhoods that probably had much better public access, much better schooling, and it kept the black community in places that didn't necessarily get the best amount of public funding. Well, as it turned out, most of the high-risk areas obviously ended up being black neighborhoods. In general, this forced white and black neighborhoods to completely separate, like we were just saying, which is exactly what happened to Greenwood.
Okay.
Now, the Greenwood district of Tulsa was a northern part of the city that's population was predominantly black, if not completely and totally black.
Mm-hmm.
The white citizens of Tulsa even referred to Greenwood as, quote, Little Africa. It was very well known that this was a black neighborhood.
Okay.
Now, the thing about Greenwood, however, is that it was a very proud neighborhood. The community there was very much dedicated to each other and dedicated to bettering the neighborhood. Some Greenwood citizens worked for white businesses in other areas of Tulsa, but they spent their money in Greenwood. This was mainly due to the fact that African Americans were barred from entering white businesses because of segregation. So Greenwood was home to nearly exclusively black-owned businesses. With its citizens putting money back into the neighborhood, Greenwood started to grow in wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, these segregation laws caused all of this wealth to flow into this black neighborhood.
Again, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? They're literally growing their own economy.
They are growing their economy, but even past that, even if that wasn't their goal, it's like a happy accident that this money can't be spent outside of Greenwood. So you have a bustling economy.
So you say, like, I'm not saying like segregation like is in any way good, but for this part, it actually kind of, like you said, accidentally worked out for them because they had no other choice. But again, it worked. And like you said, the South, they focused on building their own little, you know, like area.
Yes, it did work. But I think the reason it worked so well in Greenwood is because a very wealthy black man known as O.W. Gurley moved into the neighborhood and actually invested a lot of money into black businesses. He actually helped open a large number of the businesses in Greenwood at the time. So they had these businesses open where money could be spent. So it was a really good investment, actually, on Gurley's point. And at one point on Greenwood's Main Street, Greenwood Avenue, there were black-owned movie theaters, candy shops, pharmacies, doctor's offices, grocery stores, hotels, everything you can think of in this small neighborhood. It's not a very small neighborhood. I think it was like 35 streets, but still, it was everything you can think of on this street. They had it. And soon Greenwood Avenue grew to such a height that it was referred to as Black Wall Street.
You'd call it a bustling.
Oh yeah, definitely. It was definitely bustling. And it was known as the most affluent black community in the entire US.
Oh, so the option to vote would probably skyrocket a bit in this area.
It probably would have, but obviously their wealth didn't sit very well with other Tulsans.
Bastards.
Even with all of this wealth, Greenwood wasn't protected from persecution. And that couldn't be more evident than with one of our main people in this story, Mr. Diamond Dick Rowland.
Oh, is he going to be a dick as well?
No, he's a black man.
Oh, he's one of the good guys.
Well, actually, he was known to be a bit of a man about town. He liked the ladies, supposedly.
Yeah, but don't we all?
We do. He was very young. He was like, I think he was 19 at the time.
Oh, come on. We was all like that when we were 19.
Yeah. There was a lot of stuff to Dick Rowland as well. His backstory in itself is really interesting. And in the book, The Burning, Tim Madigan goes into it in great detail. So definitely pick up the book if you want to know everything about Dick Rowland. We're kind of giving an overview of this entire story.
I tell you what, it must, if he didn't give himself the nickname Diamond, that's a good nickname.
He gave himself the name Dick.
Yeah, he gave himself the name Dick. His name not just Richard.
No, it's not. He was named something completely different. Read the book if you want to know. But by the time he was in high school, he completely changed his name from something completely unrelated to Dick and called himself Diamond Dick Rowland. Completely changed it, yeah.
Still pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Cool cat.
He was. Now, Rowland was a shoe shiner in the white part of Tulsa. Throughout his workday, he would actually frequently enter a building known as the Drexel Building because this particular building had a colored toilets, and he was obviously able to use those. So he would use those throughout the day frequently just when he needed to go to the bathroom.
That's so weird to think about. Like obviously, there's always been like men and women's toilets, but like he couldn't have gone into, like he could have been absolutely bursting for a piss and he couldn't have used the white bathroom.
No, he couldn't have.
That's infuriating in a way.
Well, it was a law back then, so some places he would get arrested for that.
Jesus Christ, that's petty, isn't it?
It's very petty. Well, to get to the toilets in the Drexel Building, Rowland had to actually ride the elevator, and the operator of this elevator was named Sarah Page. She was a young white woman, and I think she was 17 at the time.
Okay.
He had met her a couple of times and had rode in the elevator a couple of times, and supposedly it wasn't really, there was nothing, no issues up to this point. Now, there are debated accounts, but supposedly on this particular instance, when Rowland entered the elevator, it was either when he was entering or when he was leaving, he supposedly tripped and fell into Paige.
Hmm.
And Paige screamed, and then she accused him of trying to assault her or rape her. We don't exactly know what happened because I believe it was when the doors were closed when whatever happened. But Rowland wasn't known as the person to do something like that.
Mm.
And he was also very terrified. You'll see in a moment, he runs back home to his mom and he's very terrified about what's going to happen to him. But he was not the type of person to do that. Plus, it was in the middle of an elevator in the middle of white Tulsa. So,
and he'd been doing this for a long, he'd been getting the elevator for a long time to use the toilet. It's not like, you know what I mean? He's taken this ride before and there's been nothing happen.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, I think I would go with Tim Madigan's idea of the story, which is that he either trips, brushes into her some way, or he trips and falls and has to brace himself against her to keep himself from falling.
Again, it sounds very, I'm getting a lot of flashbacks to the Emmett Till episode.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
A lot of parallels to draw there.
Yeah.
Well, Rowland ran from the elevator, and as he's running away, Paige is screaming, and a clerk comes, and she points him out and says, "This guy obviously tried to assault and rape me." And Rowland runs back into Greenwood and makes his way home. And obviously he tells his mother what happened, and pleads with her and says, I did not do what she's saying I did. And instantly his mother was terrified. Mm-hmm. Because at this time in America, the KKK was very active, and black men had actually been killed for much less than what Roland had been accused of. This was the height of lynchings. We're talking thousands of lynchings, not just against blacks, but obviously there was thousands of lynchings happening all over the United States at the time. And the KKK, which I found out through my research, was actually started after Lincoln freed the slaves, it was kind of a movement against freeing the slaves, saying that, no, we need to recognize that African-Americans are on a lower level than us. And this group is what tried to start that. And it began with only about six members and grew to being, I think it was 6 million, 5 million members around this time.
Imagine just being like, look, let's be real, the KKK aren't exactly the most reasonable bunch, are they?
Well, no, they're absolutely terrible people.
No, don't go as far as to say they're absolute cunts. We know that. It's well known they are absolute cunts. Look, that's mad to think that it started off as just six racist dudes. And all it took was like just a little rally cry and then boom, 6 million.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was five at this time, I think. But yeah, it wasn't necessarily a quick thing to happen. But over the course of at least 60, 70 years, yeah, it grew to being an enormous active community that literally killed people. For very slight offenses that, or killed people for whatever reason they felt like. And tarring and feathering black men, that's discussed in the book. It's very, very gruesome stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the following day after Roland returned home, he was arrested and he was taken to the Tulsa courthouse to await trial. Now, this is where it gets a bit seedy. The story was actually picked up by a local newspaper. By multiple newspapers, actually, pretty much instantly. But one in particular caused the main issues we're going to be discussing in a moment.
Okay.
The Tulsa Tribune actually ran an article about the story on its front page the day after Roland was arrested. And it was titled, quote, "Nab Negro for Attacking Girl in Elevator."
It doesn't exactly have a ring to it, does it?
Well, think about the meaning behind it. It's saying, grab him.
Mm, yeah, I know.
Nab this black man for attacking this girl in the elevator. But in the article, it just kind of, I read the article, and it's just a quick article saying what happened and where he's at. But the title, what you see the most of is, go grab this black person.
Okay, I know we're not meant to make comparisons to all that stuff, sort of stuff, but the media are fuckers. They can control everything.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair to say nowadays. I mean, the media is very, they're so scaremongering. This is like that back then's version of clickbait.
Mm.
I think we can draw a comparison there.
That's a fair comparison because it still goes on.
Yeah, exactly.
The media essentially does control what we think just from a headline. Look at that. How many people do you think would actually read the article as opposed to just look at the headline? Like you said, it's clickbait.
Well, you're going to know in a moment.
Okay.
Because a couple of hundred of these editions were sent out with paperboys at like 3 a.m. that morning. The paperboys were on the corners screaming things like, lynching to be done tonight, lynching of Negro man to be done this evening. A lot of ridiculous stuff shouting these paperboys, and people were picking them up like crazy. And some people were saying this is probably not a good idea to the paper, saying this is probably too inflammatory, you shouldn't do this. And the edition was eventually pulled the same day, but not before enough people had read it to cause a huge mob to start heading towards the courthouse.
See, it's just sheep mentality, isn't it? Herd mentality, like one person gets outraged and it just spreads.
That's it.
Again, even with essentially false information from what we know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't know what happened. I mean, and in fairness, you kind of have to say you don't know what happened. You know what I mean? Like, it's not fair to just say he didn't do anything because we don't know. We really don't know. Mm-hmm. And you can't just say somebody's innocent because it's so long ago. But I'm leaning more towards the fact that he probably didn't do it because there was no history of him doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the balance of probabilities, he probably didn't do anything wrong.
Look, it's kind of, again, in another comparison to that, today, I'm sure there's been stories of people who have been wrongly accused of being, like, paedophiles on the internet and found innocent, but still for the rest of their life, they're tainted.
The persecution side of things like that is very difficult because you can ruin somebody's career that way and then...
It's almost like there's no coming back from certain things. Like, once people have got it in their head, you're done.
Yeah, there is. I mean, it depends on if you actually did it or not. I think if you actually did certain things, then it gets into the realm of being a sliding scale of morality where,
yeah,
it was it too bad or was it, you know, not that bad?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're getting off topic. Let's just.
No, I'm talking about, because I'm comparing it to this one, because let's go with the fact that it was an accident. It wasn't. It was essentially a false accusation. That's what I'm kind of getting at. Like, even if you are found like innocent or you didn't do it, once it's in the general public's mind, there's not, again, it's kind of hard to come back from.
That's true. But I mean, I'll even go a step further, and we might get hate mail for this. Thank you all for your lovely messages. They might turn very quickly now. If he did do it, you still can't lynch him.
No, that's absolutely for what it was. So are we saying, like, if he did try to attack her and rape her?
Yes. I'm saying, justice wise, he needs to go to court and he needs to go be punished through the justice system.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I think that's the only way you can do it. And I think that's one of the biggest things that people don't like about cancel culture, and that people don't get their day in court in cancel culture. People are just canceled. I know that's a pretty, pretty wide comparison trying to draw
to being lynched to death.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry if that seems like a very unfair comparison. I don't mean it to make light of lynchings in general. I'm just saying that it seems like that mob mentality of pushing so far, because you think someone did something or because you don't agree that somebody did something. I suppose the difference there is that we know that somebody did something in cancel culture. So, in general, unless you're counting Marilyn Manson, who, he's had a lot of accusations come out, so I'm thinking he probably did some stuff.
He probably is a piece of shit.
Yeah, he's probably a piece of shit. My mom always told me.
Everyone's mom always told you that. Actually, funny enough, my mom didn't ever tell me Marilyn Manson was a piece of shit.
He's an intelligent guy, but intelligent people can be very manipulative, so I can imagine he did it.
If sometimes the intelligent ones are the fucking worst.
That's true. I mean, most of the time, the intelligent ones are the worst. Well, we got off topic a bit. But anyways, outside the courthouse where Roland was being kept, hundreds of white people began gathering, and they were demanding that the sheriff turn over Roland to the mob.
Mm-hmm.
Now, very lucky for Roland, the current county sheriff, Sheriff McCullough, refused, because in his opinion, he has the same opinion as I do, because I'm a fan of the law. His opinion was that the matter should be settled in court, not with mob violence. Now, I say it's actually lucky for Roland because the previous sheriff did let a mob take a prisoner to be lynched. So he really lucked out.
Yeah, because that's, again, in those times, you could easily picture a sheriff going, yeah, here he is, have him. But no, again, at least there is someone who seems to actually have, you know, a shred of, you know, like, actually follows the law like his job should.
Back in Greenwood, the newspaper story had reached its citizens as well. The news of the growing mob at the courthouse led a few of the more combat-oriented Greenwood residents, who were mostly veterans, to travel to the courthouse to make sure nothing happened to Roland. They arrived fully armed, and they confronted the mob. And at this point, it was a few hundred whites in the mob, with only a handful of black Tulsans. However, the black group had more weapons than the mob, so the mob didn't dare attack them yet.
Kind of like the Spartans, isn't it?
It's kind of like the Spartans, yeah. And actually, we need to tell a quick story about these veterans. There was one veteran in particular who will come into play in just a moment. His name was O.B. Mann. And his story from Tim Madigan's book is very interesting about how he fought in World War I. And while they were overseas, they were actually, they tell this story about how him and his platoon, I can't remember which service he was in, so I'm going to say platoon. They were in a forest, and one of the tactics of the Germans at the time was to drop pamphlets on these black soldiers. And the pamphlets basically said, why are you fighting for these Americans? They're treating you like shit. Why would you fight for America? Why don't you come to Germany and fight with us, and we'll treat you so much better than these racist people are treating you?
Because this was prior to the Nazis, wasn't it? This wasn't the Nazi Party, Germany. It was just Germany at war.
It was just Germany in World War I. And there's a lot of arguments on whether Germany just entered World War I because they had an obligation to allies and that stuff. That there's a huge that I think World War One is even more intense than World War Two in a lot of ways. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff there. But no, it wasn't a racist party in Germany at the time.
I was actually thinking that when you said the date, when it, because it was, this was in the '20s, wasn't it? I was thinking when we was going about the racist thing. Like, I was wondering like, how were black soldiers seen during war? Like,
they were seen as expendable.
Yes, I'm saying. It kind of makes, again, because people automatically assume of the World Wars, they automatically assume, again, the Nazi Party. World War One wasn't, it wasn't the Nazis.
No, it wasn't, not at the time. I mean, it was still, they were still fighting, but we can't go into details on
that. They weren't good, but you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, honestly, even that's debatable. It's just a huge situation, World War One was. But I thought the tactics the Germans were using against the black soldiers was very impressive, to say the least, to drop pamphlets on them instead of dropping bombs on them.
Yeah.
They were like, come join our forces. That was very interesting to read about that.
Because think about it, like, you'd be tempted, wouldn't you? Like, it, in hindsight now, you'd go, obviously not, but looking at it, picture being like someone who's, you kind of know you're expendable. Your homeland is essentially just as hostile as it is at war, because just due to your skin tone, you're getting like essentially shit on. You'd look at it and go, hang on, this sounds all right.
Yeah, I can imagine some people did desert.
Yeah, and I wouldn't judge them either.
Yeah. Well, that Greenwood group, they approached the courthouse and they spoke to Sheriff McCullough, who actually assured them that no harm would come to Roland.
McCullough was white, wasn't he?
He was white, yeah.
Okay.
But he assured them that no harm would come to Roland, and it was probably best that they leave the area because of any possible danger. So the men agreed, and they left, and they went back to Greenwood.
Okay.
The white crowd actually also started to leave. However, they weren't going home. They were going to collect weapons. So I guess they were going home. But they were going home to collect weapons to come back.
They were going home to come back.
Yes, exactly. That mob soon returned with shotguns, rifles, pistols, and other types of weaponry. And the mob also started to grow in size, now garnering thousands of whites, all armed in some way.
Can we at some point have a nice story about the whites? Because I find myself on so many episodes going, fucking whites. And I'm like, oh, are they me?
Hey, man, you find a nice story about whites from history, and I'll do it.
There aren't any other. I knew there wouldn't be.
No, there's plenty of stories from white. I mean, well, if it involves two white people, it's going to be, one of them's going to be bad. You know what I mean? So it's like, we can't really do happy stuff. This is unfortunate history, man. Well, we did one where whites were the victims in Unit 731. So we're giving everybody their due.
Yeah, but there were a lot more Chinese victims in Unit 731.
Yeah, but, you know, whites were included.
Like, the whites were kind of like a secondary victim in that story.
Don't degrade the suffering, man. They were there and it was very bad for them. Go listen to our Unit 731 episode if you want to hear some gruesome details about that.
Yeah, it's one of our more gory ones.
Yeah. Now, the news of the larger mob started to reach Greenwood. So that same group of black men went back to the courthouse. This time when they arrived, they were met with an incredibly large group that was fully armed, but they still stood their ground, and they approached the courthouse again. But again, McCullough reassured that no harm would come to Roland. So they decided to leave again because they thought it was best to return to Greenwood. But as they tried to leave, one of the old white men, I say old white man not as a general statement, he was an old white man, mm-hmm. Approached one of the black men who we just mentioned, O.B. Mann. Like we said, Mann had been a veteran in World War One. He was a very big man. And this old white man approached him and demanded that Mann hand over his gun, which Mann quickly denied.
Not happening, is it?
No, he was like, absolutely not. I do not think so. But the white man decided to just lunge for the gun, and they started to struggle. And that resulted in the gun being discharged, which then resulted in all hell being broken loose.
I can picture one bang and it's bam, 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 everywhere. Everyone just laying
everyone,
off.
Everyone. That old man died. He was one of the first to die.
Oh, did it shoot him? Did it go into him or did he just...
No, that didn't shoot him. He was hit by a stray bullet.
So probably other white people probably killed him.
Likely, yes. Very much, yeah. Very likely. But there was thousands of whites and these other groups of people were just shooting at each other. It was crazy. Just all hell broke loose. But a lot of the group actually was able to escape back to Greenwood, which we'll discuss in a second.
Okay.
Once that first shot was fired, albeit accidentally, an enormous battle began. all of the whites began to fire on any black Tulsan they could find in the white side of Tulsa.
Fucking hell.
Anyone left on the white side of Tulsa was fair game for the mob.
That is insane.
Now I'm actually going to read a snippet from Tim Madigan's book. I've got two snippets that I want to read. I'll read the other one in a second. But this one is very intense because he doesn't actually shy away from being intense in this book. But this will give you an idea what the book's like and how the story goes. It's very interesting.
Okay.
But this one is terrible. This part of the story is told from the viewpoint of somebody who's hiding in a drugstore.
Okay.
And while he's hiding in a drugstore, he looks out the window or out from behind this pole and he sees a young black man. And this is a direct quote from the book. He said, "The desperate young Negro appeared seconds later, sprinting down an adjoining alley. He was a short, wiry fellow wearing a dirty denim shirt and denim pants and work boots. He panted as he stopped, looking both ways as he came to the mouth of the alley. Then he tore off onto 3rd Street, trying to make it to the alley on the other side. But as he ran, a dozen guns fired as one, a barrage so thick, it's a wonder the whites didn't end up shooting themselves. The Negro's body jerked several times as the bullets struck him, and he dropped heavily on the asphalt before he could finish 3 strides. Dark stains spread across his shirt and pants, and for a few seconds, a stunned silence took over the night. Gun smoke hung over the street like a fog, and the world smelled of sulfur. But then the mob recovered its wits, and a loud cheering replaced the sound of the guns.
Fuck's sake.
The black man clutched a pistol. He was still alive and writhing in agony. A man in a bow tie and crisp straw hat approached and kicked the gun from the Negro's hand, allowing the crowd to safely surround the fallen man and taunt him from up close. A man in a dark suit, whom Holloway, who's the person that's watching this happen, whom Holloway's supposed to be a doctor, approached the mob with his medical bag and tried to push through to the wounded man, but he was cursed and thrown back. The doctor shook his head and reconsidered, starting down the street as the mob began to hack at the prone Negro with pocket knives."
God's sake, that's just...
This is the last bit. 3 ambulances roared down the street towards the fallen black man, and the mob turned its attention on them. "Get the hell out of here," one man yelled. "Don't touch that filthy..." I'm not going to repeat this word. Another one screamed. The stunned ambulance attendants shut off their engines and just sat watching. The crowd grew as blood pooled in the street around the young Negro, and he called for his mama.
It's sickening. It is sickening. It's horrible.
It's terrible, yeah. And that, and then he died a few minutes later, obviously.
Oh, yes, from
terrible wounds. I'm sorry if saying the word Negro doesn't sound right. I mean, I'm hoping that's not offensive.
It's quoted.
Yeah, I'm quoting it in the context of the book. So if I've said anything that's at all offensive throughout this entire episode, I do apologize. I'm not trying to be offensive, and I definitely will not be repeating the N-word, which is repeated throughout this book in context of being quotes in that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, very intense stuff. That's the kind of things that were happening throughout this entire massacre on the white side of Tulsa. Any black person they could find, they were killing them in any way they could. And we didn't put this into context at the beginning, but a lot of these people doing the killing were KKK members, but a lot of the KKK members weren't just normal people. They were police officers. They were in a higher echelon of the government. They were huge in a lot of areas, a lot of things that have power over people. They were infiltrated in a lot of these places. So a lot of those people that were doing that killing, some of them may well have been police officers.
They were looking for a reason to do this kind of shit.
Absolutely. And as this was going on, people were being deputized, actually, by the police. Because at this point, once things broke out, it was starting to become a race riot, quote unquote. They were saying that these black men and women were attacking whites, basically, is the story that was being told. And all the white men that wanted to fight, they would approach a police officer, and the police officer would say, quote, "Grab a gun and grab an N-word." That's what they would say. Everybody was deputized, and then they just gave full-on support to this entire onslaught against black people.
Well, is it essentially, what's the word, martial law? You do what you fucking like?
No, see, martial law is when they have military control over a city. I think you're just thinking of all hell breaking. I know what you're talking about. There is are you talking about anarchy?
No, I don't know what anarchy means. There is a certain word to it where it's almost like it's just, you go, it's every man for himself. Obviously, this wasn't every man for himself. It was every white man picking up arms and taking on any black person that can fall. And there's a word for it. I'm not thinking of it.
I'm sure that the listeners are screaming at the podcast. So
it's not martial law, though.
No, it's not. Meshes the podcast if you know what it is. Let us know.
What I'm getting at is in that thing, it's like you're left to police yourself.
You weren't, though. It was just all of the police force was just growing.
Yeah.
So the police were still there, and it was still a big presence because the police were fighting against the black community because they... But it's not even that they thought. A lot of them knew what had happened, but they were just saying, you know what? Let's just put an end to this. We don't like these black communities either because they're doing too well. They're too wealthy. That's one of the main reasons this thing boiled over to the point that it did is that Greenwood was so successful. So even if you were a white policeman, you didn't like that neighborhood either because they made more money than you did.
Well, as a whole, the neighborhood as a whole made more money than just one guy. You know what I mean? Like, it's stupid. It's just...
Well, it's not even that. I mean, that's an even better point to make is that they could make direct comparisons. They could say, you know what? I'm working very hard every single day, and this black man owning this shop in this neighborhood is making double my salary.
Mm.
You know, they could actually put a face to this anger, saying this individual person is doing better than I am, and that's just not right because they're a black person.
I suppose it's that you can be too successful for your own good.
Well, it's not too successful. They deserved the success.
That's been taken wildly out of context. I don't mean that.
You need to be careful.
I'm just saying, like, it's almost like they've put, like, at the time for how things were, it's almost like they've put a rod on their own back because of how well they're doing. People, like, the white folk are taking notice. Like, why are they doing so fucking well?
Yeah. But the point of that is, they're only doing well because of these laws that these white people imposed to make their lives worse or to separate them. They're doing well because of that.
Mm.
It's very interesting. Very interesting how it all plays out.
It's almost like there was no winning for the African Americans in this situation, was there?
There really wasn't. It's like, what are they meant to do? You know,
just suffer like the white people want them to.
Yeah. Well, as we were saying, a lot of white people were picking up arms. There's one more quote that I want to make from the book now. I'll quote a little bit of this one. Like I said, we're not going to be laughing at any victims, and we're not going to laugh at victims in this, but the author did intentionally make the quote in this funny. So it is a giggle. You can giggle at the line, but it's not making fun of any victims.
No.
But I'm going to read this. Basically, this man's name is Gary, and in this part of the chapter, Tim Madigan talks about how Gary, he likes black people. He likes black people, but he likes them to stay in their place. So now that they're getting all crazy, I'm going to arm myself and I'm going to go fight them. That's what he said.
I'm not racist, but...
Yeah, exactly.
That's what that is.
Well, this is the quote directly from this book. Well, enough was finally enough. Now the N-words had finally crossed the line and it was time for lessons to be taught, as a parent would teach an unruly child. Late that night, Gary's neighbor called from two doors down, telling him of a melee at the courthouse. A full-scale black uprising had begun, Gary's neighbor told him, so maybe they ought to get their guns and see what they could do to help. The neighbor carried a rifle and Hugh Gary a shotgun as they sped off downtown in the neighbor's car parking near the courthouse. Then they followed the dozens of other excited men also carrying weapons, walking north on Main Street towards the sound of the shooting. At 2nd Street, they turned east, towards Cincinnati where the gunfire seemed loudest. Gary and his neighbor walked gingerly in that direction, hiding behind cars, then behind the corners of buildings. The louder the shooting became, the more Gary entertained second thoughts about the necessity of personally teaching the N-words any lessons firsthand. He and his neighbor hid for a few moments behind a building, listening to the shooting nearby. Then his neighbor poked his head around the corner of the building to see what was happening, and the second he did, he took a bullet straight through the throat. Blood gushed from the neighbor's punctured artery as he crumbled to the ground, which is where Gary left him, fatally wounded, fighting for his final breath. Gary ran back in the direction he had come from and was home by midnight. He put his shotgun up for good and joined his wife in bed. That's no place for a married man with kids, he told her.
Fucking Gary.
Putting that in the context, I think that's humorous. It is humorous.
It is somewhat humorous.
It's meant to be humorous. It's meant to be like, well, yeah, people are dying, but then this is kind of a little comedic relief almost. But it also puts it into perspective that it was really normal white people going out and doing this. Really normal everyday people just grabbing a shotgun and going out and shooting people.
He just left his friend. I bet his neighbor probably got shot by a stray white bullet.
He might have done. Yeah, absolutely. He could have done. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, while this entire onslaught was happening, the black community was actually fighting back as well.
Oh.
With many white casualties resulting from the first shots being fired, really. But once all of the black citizens had made it back to Greenwood, the battle actually started to turn in their favor.
Mm-hmm.
While the white citizens tried to advance on Greenwood, the black community was fighting them off amazingly well. Many of the Greenwood men, as we mentioned earlier, were veterans of World War I, and they knew how to handle a weapon. And in the book, it goes into detail on a lot of this. It's very interesting. Tells you about specific people, about what they did and how they fought back. Like shooting a rifle from the window of their bathroom type stuff. It's very interesting. However, the police in the city, like we mentioned earlier, began deputizing any white man that wanted to fight. And the National Guard arrived in the city to assist in what was now being called a race riot.
So it's essentially every white man that was killed, they were killing a police officer. A deputized, you know, technically they've been deputized. So not actually, but in the eyes of the law.
I mean, in a way, yeah. Now, planes were actually brought in to attack the citizens of Greenwood. Planes. People were in these planes shooting rifles into at the people of Greenwood. And this is actually what succeeded in pushing the citizens of Greenwood back enough for the whites to get into the neighborhood. Now, once they were in Greenwood, the white men broke into every home and business and either escorted the people inside outside or they very unceremoniously shot them. There was actually one couple that was an old couple and they were just shot right there. I think it was due to the fact that they didn't want to walk them out and walk because they were so old. They didn't want to walk them through the city because everyone they were escorting outside was being marched to an area and they just shot them both right there.
Fuck's sake.
Now, once the people were outside, the building was gutted. Every single building was gutted of every valuable that it had. And this was actually done by a lot of white women. They would come in with the white men and they would just run in and just steal everything, take everything, just take it all out and run it outside. And after it was run outside, the building would be burnt to the ground. And this was done to every single home and business in Greenwood until nothing was left standing. This is 35 streets for Americans. This is 35 blocks of homes and businesses. That is an enormous amount of homes and businesses.
Yep. And also, again, go back to the women, white women, you guys suck too, just as much as we do.
That is so not the, I didn't want to do this episode to where it would make people feel bad.
I feel bad.
You didn't do anything. I didn't do anything.
I'm not American. I wasn't, my ancestors weren't there.
You know, yeah, nobody did anything. Nobody that's listening to this did something wrong with this. Most of the people that had anything to do with this are dead, long gone. You're only wrong if you think that this was right to do. That's it.
No, someone's granddad was responsible for this.
Yeah, that's true.
And you should feel bad.
If that's
your grandad. I'm only joking, it's not you, but your granddad was a fucking piece of shit.
Well, the Greenwood residents were all, after their homes were burnt down and their businesses, they were all escorted to to cages in that, basically. They were rounded up and even when they were released later on, some being released months later, over 8,000 of the citizens were homeless and forced to live in tents for a very long time.
Fuck's sake. You know what I mean? Like, imagine going from that, like having this thriving, like little community. Well, not even little, 35 blocks, like you said, community, to just being forced to live in tents. Like, it's just shit. I'd be pissed. That's putting it lightly.
I'm sure they were upset, Greg. I'm sure they were not happy about it.
You think, Greg? Do you think they were?
Would you be pissed? Yeah. Oh, what an original take.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a visionary.
Well, after the massacre, it was actually decided that the world didn't really need to know about it. Instead, it was thought that it would be better to cover the entire thing up. Documents were actually destroyed, including the original Tulsa Tribune article that we discussed earlier. That was ripped out. If you go into the Tulsa City records with like in the Tulsa libraries, the Tulsa Tribune has that article ripped out.
I'm not surprised.
Completely erasing history. And the bodies of those that were dead, that were killed, a large number of them, were buried in mass graves around Tulsa. And soon, it was almost like it had not even happened whatsoever. And all the citizens knew that it was just not something you talked about in public.
If you're digging a mass grave, you've done shitty things. There's no nice person's ever dug a mass grave.
Well, no. I mean,
Or was it the rest of the community who dug the mass graves? Or
well, no, it was the people that did wrong things, because the people in the community would have given them proper burials.
Yeah, there's never been a good mass grave. But you know what? It's one of them things. Like, oh, in my will, like it says, like, put me in a mass grave. That's what I want.
Just you.
Just me in a mass grave.
Just this giant, like 20 meter by 20 meter grave, and it's just you in the dead center.
Just chuck me in it, and then of anyone else who wants to be put in a mass grave can be thrown on top of me, and I'll start a new thing. It's probably quite economic
or dirty.
I'm dead. Dirty. I won't mind.
That's true, I suppose. Well, the citizens of Greenwood had been beaten, but they wouldn't stay down. Within about 10 years, actually, no, within the year, they had rebuilt, I think it was 100 homes, quite a few homes. And within about 10 years, the black community in Greenwood rebuilt the neighborhood to the point where you wouldn't recognize that a massacre had even happened, that the whole place had been destroyed.
No way.
However, segregation, this is very sad, actually, segregation began to end soon thereafter, which allowed the black community to spend its money outside of the community in white-owned stores. Mm-hmm. So the wealth actually began to spread out into further communities. And this unfortunately led to the closing of a large majority of the original main black-owned businesses in the town that were on Black Wall Street.
Mm-hmm. Although it's a good thing segregation ended.
Of course it is, yeah. It's just a knock-on effect.
Yeah.
There's good things that happen every day that result in bad circumstances or bad outcomes.
Mm. But in the grand scheme of things, it's a good thing.
Of course, yeah. And another unfortunate bit of this story is that a large number of the black community in Greenwood, pretty much everyone, did not recover the wealth that they had lost. Mm-hmm. And actually, there's a quote on this that's very interesting. It said that black women, for years after this had happened, would see white women on the street wearing their jewelry and run up and snatch it off of them. They would see these women that had years prior broken into their home before it was burnt down and stole their jewelry. They were wearing it proudly on the street. That's disgusting.
Yeah. No, I'm glad they ran up and snatched it off them.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I was expecting you to say, like, oh, they just couldn't do anything. Nah, they ran up and got it. I'm like, good.
You don't
good.
Take a black woman's jewelry. Are you kidding
no.
me? No. I love it. Black women are strong, man. They will fight you.
They ask you to hold their earrings while they fight someone else, and you better give them back.
They're going to fight you next. Although the massacre remained a secret for many years, it has actually begun to slowly come to the light of day. More recently, actually, mm-hmm. there were investigations into the massacre that identified three possible mass burial sites, one of which has been exhumed just, I think, in 2020, last year. And it has indeed shown to be a mass grave of victims from the massacre.
Fuck.
To this day, there are still further efforts to rebuild that area of Tulsa to its former glory. It's still going on even to this day.
Oh, really? I was thinking that. What is the area like now? What is Greenwood like now?
I suppose it would either be lower middle class, maybe. I think it's still predominantly black, maybe. I'm not sure. Let me don't speculate on that because I'm not 100% sure.
Well, it's almost exactly a century ago that this happened, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So
it's crazy.
It's not that long ago in history, in the grand scheme of things.
Not really. Now, it's very telling that a neighborhood was created and then thrived because of the laws put in place to make it fail, like I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Greenwood succeeded because of segregation, as well as the investment that the black community put into it. But even that was too much for racist minds. Some people would rather see all of Greenwood burnt to the ground than to see it prosper in any way. And no one could disagree that that is truly unfortunate.
That is truly unfortunate. And again, ignorance spreads far and wide. It's fucking everywhere.
Well, groupthink is very bad. Think for yourself.
No, you definitely should, but yeah, like I say, Even today, there are probably people in the world who have that mindset of what that mob did back then.
Yeah, I mean, there are people that do have that mindset. I watched an interview actually on them talking about how they're doing the mass exhuming, or they're exhuming the mass graves, and there was an interview of a man saying that, you know, it's kind of a waste of money, and the interviewer was like, why do you think that? And he says, well, you know, it's done, it's over with. He was a white guy.
yeah, you think.
Yeah, he was a white guy. But there was another person in there, another white guy actually, who did a quote, and he said, he was like, to that point of saying, well, it happened a long time ago, it's not a big deal, whatever. He said, injustice plus time does not equal justice.
I was just about to say, like, imagine if, like, a black guy said that about 9/11. That was a long time ago. Like,
yeah, get over
waste
it.
Waste the money. Like, yeah. But, you know, it's never forget. It's one thing for that and another thing for someone else.
Yeah, well, that's an issue with the entire world today. But that's the story of the Tulsa Race Massacre. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Greg, I hope you enjoyed it as well.
I did. It was very interesting. I wouldn't say I enjoyed it because the topic was quite horrible. And it's one of those things where you look back, it wasn't that long ago. And it does kind of make you look at your own skin tone and go, fucking hell, we've done some horrible things for it all.
Oh, don't think that. Don't think that.
I'm exaggerating, but again, it's another one where the white guys are the bad guys.
No one should ever feel bad for their skin tone. Let's all just, everyone agree to do better. You know, yeah. let's just make sure that we're all doing as best we can.
Let's not do that again.
Yeah, definitely pick up The Burning by Tim Madigan. You can pick it up in the show description, or you can pick it up on our website, unfortunatehistory.com. Mm-hmm. Please do. This is a very good book. And if you buy it through our affiliate link, it will help support the show. Very, very good book. I'm telling you. Mm-hmm. Now we have to do a little bit of housekeeping. Greg, I told you to remind me that I needed to make a correction. You didn't remind me.
I didn't remind you, but you remembered. So that's good, because I forgot.
I did remember. I got to give a shout out to, I believe it was Pete that said this. Let me just check and see if that's right.
I literally just had a message off Pistol Pete Hurley just now. Just this second, reacting to my story on Instagram. That is crazy. He's just this second. Pete, that is mental.
That is crazy. There's something about Pete.
Literally, as we was just had that little silence, I just saw Pete Hurley has reacted to your story on Instagram.
That's so funny. Well, I got to give a shout out to Pete. He gave us a correction, which is very interesting. So we've said it from the very beginning. We've said it from the absolute very beginning. Samuel Pepys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Greg, his name is spelled P-E-P-Y-S.
Yeah.
How would you pronounce that?
P-E-P-Y-S.
Yeah.
I've already got Pepys in my head. Was it Pepys?
That's another one that I had is Pepys. Those are the two that I heard originally hemmed and hawed about when I first did this, first discussed him in general in our very first episode, Robert Liston. It's actually Samuel Pepys.
Pepys?
Samuel Pepys.
Okay, that's funnier.
It is very funny because he could have changed his name to Pepys if he so chose, but he didn't. But Samuel Pepys, and I think that's very P-E-P-Y-S does not sound like Pepys to me. But
nope.
Pete is correct. So thank you, Pete, for writing into the show. And weirdly enough,
I'm going to message him now, explaining what's just happened because. That is mad.
That is
I don't know why.
Mad,
it's just so crazy to me. We're literally mid-episode talking about him. And I just saw my phone light up.
That's crazy. That is very, very weird.
Pete Hurley? I'm like, what?
That's crazy.
Is he listening live?
Yeah, that's crazy. Thank you, Pete, for that correction. We really appreciate it. Thank you, Melissa and Dwayne, for leaving us a review. And Pete as well, for leaving us a review on Apple Podcast. If you want to leave us a review, please do. Try to make it a 5-star if you can. That'd be nice. Mm-hmm. Either way, yeah. Either way, thank you so much for your support. If you want to hear more about the show, just Google Unfortunate History. If you want to follow me, just Google Cody Pennington. Greg?
If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's great. What is my Instagram handle now? It's greg.skin93, I think.
Greg Dartskin, that's fantastic.
You'll find me.
You really need to have a set name.
I kept changing it due to episodes, and now it's just, it's gone. I don't know what it
now
is.
Now if someone listens to our third episode or fourth episode, they'll have no idea how to find you now.
They won't find me.
They will not find you. Just try searching for Greg Skinner. I'm sure you'll pop up with you.
Yeah, I'll pop up eventually. You'll see me.
Yeah, you'll see him. But with that said, unfortunately, we gotta go. So stay unfortunate, everybody.
Stay unfortunate, guys. Ta-ra.
Bye.